my name is Jonathan Anderson, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the Seattle sports scene, because that's what I like to talk about the most in the whole wide world. But first, let me just tell you a little bit about myself. I am a sophomore here at SCU, majoring in communications. So the Seahawks had a huge win versus the Los Angeles Rams last Thursday night on primetime TV. As a biased Seahawks fan, it was a great game for Russell Wilson. 267 yards with 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, with a quarterback rating of 151.8. A perfect quarterback rating is 158.3. So you can't get much better than that. But with that being said, the Seahawks also ran for 176 yards with Chris Carson, their running back, running for about 123 yards. The one piece that is concerning is their defense. Their defense, especially their pass defense, cannot stop anything. Jared Goff, the Rams quarterback, threw for 395 yards with 2 touchdowns. So much less efficient than Russell Wilson, but I still would like to see the passing yards be diminished by especially the secondary of the defense. And I kind of knew going into this game that it was going to be a tough matchup because the Rams have somewhat of a vaunted offense, and our defense leaves a little less to be desired. It is no more the years of the Legion of Boom from 2013, 14, and 15. But we are still looking for some level of competitiveness from our secondary. It was a little bit of a surprising performance from the offensive line because Jamarco Jones, naturally a left tackle, started at right guard for the Seahawks on Thursday night. Now, this was the first time he's ever started at right guard on any occasion, at any level. And for the most part, our offensive line held up pretty well, especially against a pretty established Rams defensive line that features who is considered one of the best football players in the whole entire world, Aaron Donald. I think the Rams only sacked Russell Wilson only 2 times. And of course, Russell Wilson was able to get out of some sacks because of his mobility skills. I think what impresses me most about Russell Wilson is his ability to throw on the run. He's able to have pinpoint accuracy while moving around in the pocket and outside of the pocket, which is impressive because a lot of quarterbacks do not have the same level of accuracy of him outside the pocket that they do inside the pocket. The emerging star for me is tight end Will Disley, as he just continues to catch every ball that is thrown at him. This is especially surprising since he's coming back from a patella tendon injury that he suffered week 3 of last year. Most of the time, patella tendon injuries take 18 months to fully come back from, and he seems to be doing it in about 15 months. He's second on the team in receiving yards, and I think he's leading the team in receiving touchdowns. Going back to Russell Wilson, what makes him so special is that he doesn't have a tremendous amount of weapons on the wide receiver position. He has Tyler Lockett, everyone knows who he is and what he can do. And in my opinion, he's a little bit underrated. He doesn't quite get the respect that he deserves. But besides Tyler Lockett, he doesn't really have anybody else. He has DK Metcalf, who is good, but he's still emerging as he's only a rookie. But he still has a lot to go. DK Metcalf, by the way, was able to gather in a 40-yard touchdown pass from Russ Wilson in the second quarter of the game on Thursday. This brings his total to 2 touchdown passes on the season. One of the big emphases was to get the running backs more involved in the passing game this season, and I think that they're pretty successful in doing so. In Thursday's game, running back Chris Carson was able to pick up a touchdown, a little bit iffy, in my opinion, as he bobbled it and then caught it. But ultimately, it was a huge catch because that was a touchdown that put us ahead for good. I think the more we are able to get the running backs involved in the passing game, it'll open up the passing game to a greater extent than it was previously. Now, switching up focus to the defensive line, I think it is coming along slowly but surely. Jadeveon Clowney, one of the star pass rushers for the Seahawks, said earlier this week that he feels confident that things are progressing smoothly, and even though we haven't had the sack numbers that we've had in the past, he feels like it'll open up eventually. Truth be told, our next opponent, the Cleveland Browns, have one of the weaker offensive lines in the league, so I'm hoping we can take advantage of that. But we'll see. People tend to play above their abilities for the Seahawks because we've had so much success of late, especially under Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. Now, talking about the Cleveland Browns, they have quarterback Baker Mayfield, and Baker Mayfield had such a tremendous rookie season, but that success hasn't carried over as much this season as he has 4 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. That is not a good ratio. People around the country say that he is regressing from what he was last year, and that's not what you want to do as a second-year quarterback, just establishing himself in the league. There's no denying that Baker has a tremendous amount of ability, and he can just place the ball really wherever he wants to, but his attitude has gotten himself in trouble, and it's really distraction. I think that might have a little part to do with his poor play of late. The key player for the Cleveland Browns that we have to focus on is Nick Chubb, as he has 484 yards on the season, clearly on pace for over 1,000 yards for the entire season, and he is establishing himself as one of the premier running backs in the league. And it's a little hard for me as a Seahawks fan, as we had a chance to draft him because we had the 27th pick of the 2018 draft, and we decided to draft Rashad Penny. Now, Rashad Penny's a fine player, but he has not produced nearly enough, as much as Nick Chubb. And Nick Chubb was picked with the 35th overall pick that same draft. It is what it is, and he's certainly found a home in Cleveland. But with that being said, he's a really good back, and I'm slightly concerned because we were not able to stop Rams running back Todd Gurley. Now, Todd Gurley is clearly one of the best running backs in the league also, but he is injured. And people around the country are saying that he's on the decline. So there has to be a tremendous amount of emphasis on the defensive line this week, both rushing the passer and stopping the run. And it's a little bit tricky because historically the Seahawks do not like to dial up blitzes. They only dial up blitzes when they have to. They like to get pressure just using four pass rushers. And that worked when we were loaded on the defensive line with Chris Clemons, Red Bryant, Cliff Averill, and Michael Bennett back in the golden years of 12, 13, 14. But let's face it, we are not as talented as we were back then. So maybe there needs to be a philosophical change regarding that. Maybe there needs to be more of an emphasis in calling blitzes in order to manufacture more pressure. What made those teams back then so special is that they were able to get pressure just using four pass rushers, and then they were able to stop the run at a prolific rate. A great defensive line helps negate a strong passing offense, as obviously when there's more pressure on the quarterback, the quarterback is not able to get the passes off accurately. And then by that being the case, it is easier on the secondary. What is happening with this year's Seahawks is that we are not able to get pressure on the quarterback, and that puts all the pressure in the world on a shaky secondary that can't seem to do anything, really. But knowing Pete Carroll, he is known for being a defensive coach, and I have full confidence of his ability just to change things in a quick manner. Let's shift our focus to the Washington Huskies. I am not quite as positive about the Huskies as I was the Seahawks, as the Huskies just lost their second loss of the season, knocking them out of the college football playoff race for good, which is a problem because we've had the best quarterback in Jacob Eason than we've had in 15 years, and he's probably going to leave at the end of the season, and we won't be able to utilize his skills to the best of his ability. Saturday's game was frustrating on so many levels. I think the thing that frustrated me the most was the fact that the play calling was weak. It wasn't aggressive, which there has to be some balance, but there also has to be some level of confidence that you will be able to move the ball against a pretty porous defense. Stanford's team was not the Stanford of a couple years ago. Going into this game, they were 2-3 with their defense looking nothing like it was a couple of years ago. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the wide receiver's ability to catch the ball, as I felt like they were dropping so many passes. There was the most drop passes I've seen the Huskies have out of all my years watching their games. Now, it's fair to say that we don't have as talented as wide receivers as we did in 2016, and 2016 was our best year by far in the last 20 years. We don't have John Rush III, who has gone on to play in the NFL for the Cincinnati Bengals. And we do not have Dante Pettis, who went on to the NFL to play for the 49ers. And both of them have gone on to have pretty great starts to their year to their career so far. Rather, we have Aaron Fuller, who is a fine wide receiver, but he does not obtain the skills to continue on and playing in the NFL. And we have Andre Battaglia, who, again, is fine. And he has a lot of speed, but he doesn't have the ability to continue playing in the NFL as well. The only NFL pass catcher that we have on our roster currently is Hunter Bryant, who is a tight end. And we only give the ball to him like 3 times in the game, which is clearly not enough for a player of his caliber. He is a playmaker, and we need to utilize his playmaking abilities as much as we can. With that being said, the offensive line was weak, as we couldn't seem to negate the Stanford pass rush, and our defense was porous, uncharacteristically porous, I might add, as our defensive coordinator seems to be able to get that group playing at a pretty solid clip pretty much all the time. Maybe it was a fluke game, but it was a fluke game that did not need to happen, and it could not happen, to be honest. We were ranked 15th in the country, and we were headed in a upwards trajectory. The reality is, we could not afford that to happen, as Oregon is playing their best football of the season, and California is, for some reason, good this year. The first time that's happened in, like, since Jared Goff was the quarterback 5 or 6 years ago. We had all the momentum in the world coming in this game, and we just lost it all. And to me, it's really a lost season, because I know what kind of talent we have at the quarterback position. Our secondary is young, but it's tremendously talented, and our offensive line is experienced. It just seems like it's a season of what could have been. Now it's a season of, well, I guess there's always next year, which is rather depressing as a lifelong Husky fan. It's frustrating because there has been games where we have looked like one of the better teams in the country, with our wide receivers making excellent catches and our quarterback, Jacob Eason, being tremendously accurate. And our defensive line putting pressure on the quarterback with the lockdown secondary. I like Chris Peterson as a coach. I think he's one of the better coaches in the country, but I do feel like his teams are prone to letdown games, which is rather, again, frustrating as a fan, because I know what the best teams in the country do, what Clemson and Alabama does is not have those games. They are consistently play at their best all the time. And when they don't, they still find ways to win. And this goes back to the talent level, or the talent discrepancy, I might add, that is between a team like Washington, who's all the way over in the Pacific Northwest, and teams like Alabama and Clemson. The reality is that teams like Clemson and Alabama are recruiting way more talented players at all positions. The reality is that they are in football Mecca down there in the South, and they are able to put way more money into the program, so it looks and feels nicer. And everyone wants to go there because they know they win championships. Then I can't propose a systematic change, because I don't know a change that would fix all of these problems. I do know that consistent good coaches and coaching would help negate these issues a little bit. Other than that, all I know is that it's just tremendously frustrating to watch these big Southern schools and these big schools that are able to put more money into their program to win all the time. Let me back up, because I know UW puts a lot of money into their facilities and program as a whole, but for some reason, the talent level and the recruiting people that we are recruiting are not up to par against teams like Alabama and Clemson and Florida State. I don't want to make it seem like there's no hope, because that is not the case. I'm just pointing out something that continues to happen, and there seems to be a pattern developing surrounding the issue. I know if Jacob Eason leaves for the draft next year, the quarterback, Jake Sermon, who's a 4-star recruit, won't be as good, I don't think, as Jacob Eason, because Jacob Eason was, like I said previously, from a talent level, the most talented quarterback I've ever seen play at the program. But maybe, just maybe, Jake Sermon has that it factor that galvanizes his team to win. And I'm hoping that that's the case, because I think that's the only way that we will be able to get the Huskies to the next step, and the next step being national championship, because I believe that we are only one step down from there. So the stars have to align for it to be perfect, but I think it could happen if we are lucky. Move on to the lowly Mariners that I kind of don't want to even talk about, but I think it's important to give you the full sense of what the Seattle scene looks like. So I am a Mariners fan, begrudgingly. I've been a Mariners fan for the entirety of my life. I don't know why I'm a Mariners fan. All they do is disappoint me year in and year out. Even when they're good, they're not good enough to make the playoffs. They're just mired in mediocrity, baseball purgatory. Which is fine, but it's just incredibly disheartening at the same time, too, because you know what the good teams, like in all sports, can do? If the Mariners play the Houston Astros, they get destroyed. The Houston Astros are a talented team. They've won 107 games this year. They're loaded from the pitching staff to the 25-man roster. They just have so many deep and valuable pieces. So at the beginning of this year, management have decided that we are going to start the rebuilding process. And as a Mariners fan, and really as any sports fan, that's not the correct thing you want to hear, as no one wants to root for a team that is knowingly uncompetitive. But sometimes being uncompetitive and getting tremendous draft capital and prospect capital is what needs to happen in order for your team to be successful. It worked for the Cubs and the Astros. So let's recap. We traded away Edwin Diaz and Robinson Cano at the beginning of the year. In return, we got Jared Kelenic, who we are really depending on as being one of the best young prospects in the minor league system so far. And we haven't been disappointed as of yet. He's only grown as a baseball player and as a prospect from the beginning of the season. Next, we have Julio Rodriguez, who was in our farm system already, who is promising. And we have a couple of pitching prospects to go along with that. So I think as further we go along in the rebuilding process, the more prospect capital we are going to obtain, and hopefully the stronger our future team will be. But boy, it's tremendously frustrating to watch the current Seattle Mariners play. In my opinion, we overperformed as a team this year as we won 68 wins when we were only projected to win about 60. And this is probably due to the fact that we started out 13-2. I was on cloud 9. I thought we would never lose a game. I thought we would literally go 160-2. But that was not... That turned out not to be the case. On one hand, I was not surprised at all, but I was disheartened. If you do the math, we only won 55 games the rest of the season, which would be one of the worst records in the league this year. So we are looking for kind of 2022 as being the year that we start to play better baseball, and I think that's the year that we will get most of our prospects up in the major leagues, swinging the baseball bat and pitching at full go. Hey, thanks for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Once again, I am Jonathan Anderson, and I will be airing every Friday. Thank you for tuning in once again. I'll see you later.